I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go into the Super Bowl again, being all right.
You're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official UK podcast for the Seattle Seahawks. Here are your hosts, Ross Bell, Stuart Court, and Adam Nathan. Go Hawks!
The team may not have played since last Thursday, but us here on the Pedestrian Podcast are not taking so long off. This week on the Pedestrian Podcast, myself, Stuart Court, is joined by Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
Not too bad, man. But, you know, depending on how the show goes, I feel like I could be sort of like Richard Sherman off Richard Sherman's Achilles. Like, it could all I could all go to pot in the middle of the in the episode. But you never know. Here's hoping we can play through it.
Yeah, it's going to be quite a downbeat one at certain parts of this pod, just as it was post game last week. Ross is out, trying to further his career, his work career, which is
so selfish.
Very
that
selfish
is, man,
of him, yeah, I know.
And then, like, you know, where's you know, where's your priorities?
Yeah, so good luck and congrats, I guess, if he's going forward to Ross, but he'll be back hopefully next week, and hopefully there'll be a three-man pod in the near future, Adam.
Stranger things have happened than a three-man pod, but not many.
We'll start things off by talking about last Thursday night's game in the desert against Drew Stanton and the Arizona Cardinals. It was, for us Brits and us on this side of the Atlantic in Europe as well, another late night, and it wasn't the greatest of showings from the Seahawks on the offensive side, but with the defensive side doing a pretty bang-on job. Especially stopping Adrian Peterson. But obviously the big headline from the game was Richard Sherman. Before we get to that, what was your general feeling about the game last Thursday, Adam?
I felt like 4 years older by the time the game finished. It just felt so long. And it wasn't even like typically longer than a normal NFL game, but I don't know what it was. I just felt like I was watching it for my entire life. And yeah, I was sort of quite pleased to get to bed. But then you wake up the next morning and you just like recap whatever, and it's like, oh no, Sherman's gone down. And I think ultimately that's going to be the overall thing that stands out from this game. And you know, if the season doesn't pan out as it, we sort of hope it will do, you're probably looking at today thinking that game, sorry, and thinking, well, that's probably why.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. I think I posted somewhere on Twitter, Facebook or WhatsApp that it was about 10 to 4 and the fourth quarter hadn't even started. It was just a game which had 21 penalties for both sides. Somehow it managed to only last 3.5 hours, when it felt like a Yankees Red Sox 6-hour marathon, as you say. But on the offensive side, Russell Wilson was bounced back somewhat from what was a pretty rough outing the week before against the Redskins. He went 22 for 32, 238 and 2 touchdowns, and obviously one miraculous play stole the show, really sparked the offense and really sealed the game for the Seahawks in the second half. But this is how all that sounded via Steve Rabel on ESPN.
Fitzgerald wide side. Peterson gets the handoff. The ball comes out. It's on the ground. The Seahawks have it. Peterson dropped the ball a couple of times a week ago against San Francisco. He coughs it up again tonight. The Seahawks tackle that ball right out of his hand, and Sheldon Richardson comes up with it.
In a diamond shape, now out of that formation goes McKissick right to left. Empty backfield, five-man rush. Russell gets rid of the football. Reaching up, making the catch. Touchdown, Seahawks, Jimmy Graham. Russell read that perfectly. Blitz was coming. He just lays the ball up in the end zone and lets Jimmy Graham go for it.
On 2-yard line, all the way at the far end of the field, Peterson takes the handoff. He gets hit in the end zone. He's going to go down. It's going to be a safety. The second safety in as many weeks for the Seahawks defense.
Looking. Now he's going to roll back to the right side. Still looking. Pirouettes, looks. Now he throws downfield. Reaching up. Baldwin makes a catch. It's on the 40, 30, 20, 15, 10, 5. Knocked out of bounds. Inside the 5-yard line. Are you kidding me? Russell Wilson. He did more pirouettes than a ballerina. He found a way to throw the ball deep, and Doug Baldwin out jumps a defender and takes it all the way down inside the 5-yard line.
But yeah, as I said, though, Wilson was, I mean, after the Redskins game, he was better last Thursday, and he provided another highlight moment with all this, the triple scramble drill as well, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's a bit of one of those plays where if Bethel doesn't sort of make a mistake on the play, he could run it back for a pick six, and you wonder what the hell Wilson's doing throwing it there. But I guess that is the magic of the man, and it was a miraculous play. The you know, lost in there is a 360 degree spin, just like with a pump fake at the same time, which is just really cool. And it was an amazing play, and is one of those things that really gets you out of your seat. Had Baldwin run it in for a touchdown, then you know you're probably looking at like an all-time touchdown score. But as it happens, when Wilson hopefully one day gets in the Hall of Fame, that's one of the players that will be on the highlight reel.
Oh yeah, definitely. No, he did it a few years ago, didn't he, when he ran one in and just left Chris Collinsworth a giggling teenager just watching him just juke and jive his way past Patrick Peterson. But the underrated thing apart of that play is he did the jukes and the twirls and everything, not to no scrubs. It was Chandler Jones and Tyrann Mathieu who were chasing him down, and he just made them look amateurish at the time through that. But yeah, Doug Baldwin, I mean, I think I said somewhere as well on Friday that the biggest underrated part of that play was Baldwin, because to go up and grab that, I mean, you've said a few times in this pod that it's the one thing he can't do, then he goes and does it, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, to high point the ball, you know, if someone like Dez Bryant did that, people were going absolutely mad for sort of showing that athleticism and whatever, to like the dominating idea of the wide receiver. But it was an amazing grab, and yeah, really, really cool to watch. It's a shame that his quad injury, which is insane, he even managed to do that with the injury, yeah, probably kept him out of the end zone. But always nice to see Jimmy getting another touchdown, so I can't complain too much.
Yeah, I mean, Jimmy Graham, 2 touchdowns, 27 yards on 6 catches. I mean, he's rapidly making his way up the all-time receiving charts, and it's just a case of, well, where one camp it's where's it been for 3 years, but in this it's kind of proving our side of the camp, I think I can safely say, Adam, right, aren't we?
Yeah, and you know, as a more maybe more debatable issue, he might be going from someone who was leaving in the off-season to someone, you know, if he gets 10 touchdowns or whatever, they're going to be really hard to replace in the draft. I'm not sure if they're going to be able to do that, given A, the lack of picks, and B, other needs. Graham might be one of the people that becomes a must re-sign in the off-season, and I for one, would be all for it.
Yeah, most definitely. I think the biggest thing with Graham is obviously the money he's going to get. I don't, even with what he's doing and what he could do for the rest of the next two or three months, is the money comparative to the length, because obviously he's 30, he's going to be 31 by the time the 2018 season starts. It's very un-Seahawk, John Schneider, Pete Carroll like to pay someone that side of 30 the money that Graham may well clamour for and probably likely get on the open market. So yeah, I think he's definitely swinging back around to being a guy that is a priority this off-season, but it's going to be something to really monitor and watch.
Do you reckon he would get more than he's on now?
Well, he's on $10 million a year, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's probably, I think that might be close to the ceiling of what he's going to get, but there's desperate teams with a lot of cap space. I mean, you can easily point to the teams who are going to pick it in top five next year, and they apart from maybe the Browns, all need tight ends. And well, with the Giants, I guess, as well, but I mean, you can look at the Niners, may just want to really annoy us and give Shanahan a tight end. You've got the, I mean, Cleveland Browns have got David Njoku, looks decent, if not as splashy as they possibly had hoped. And then you've got the team.
Do you think he'd want to go to any of those teams, though?
And then you've got a team like the Chicago Bears. Yeah, maybe. I mean, that's certainly going to something that's going to count in the Seahawks' favour. But yeah, as I say, it's going to be something to closely monitor. But if they give Jimmy Graham, I don't know, what, 3 years, 20, what, 5 million, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, certainly you'd probably try and backload it to the set, to the point that, you know, the majority of the money, or, you know, the guarantees sort of go away from next year, to see how that goes. But You have to play some players on offense, and you know, right now I'm looking at Graham and Paul Richardson and saying I'm not sure we can replace one of them, let alone both of them, you know, guaranteed in the draft, and they're two guys I'd really like to keep around for next year.
Yeah, I agree. Quickly, back on Doug Bowen, Pro Football Focus rated, gave him a wide receiver rating of 118.8. He had 5 targets, 5 receptions, 95 yards, and obviously 60 yards after the catch. I mean, as we talk about Graham, and the fact you have to pay some players on offense, and we've seen it with what not paying the airline does. But if you have a core three of Baldwin, Graham, and Wilson under big money, it's not a bad base to build around, is it?
No, I mean, in an offensive league, those three are, you know, three players that we've seen it. Ultimately, if the three of them click, we can pretty much beat anyone if we get enough, because we can get enough points on the board. And you know, it's a risky strategy to hedge it all on the defense, as you saw with someone like Deshaun Watson. When a quarterback is absolutely hot, even your best on defense can't necessarily stop them. So you do need guys on the other side to win the game for you every now and again.
Yeah, most definitely. Also on offense, Paul Richardson continue to ascend, and like Graham, his importance is growing by the week and by the catch. Pro Football Focus have put him as the fourth best deep pass catch rate so far in 2017, and it was just his one catch on the night, but it was a play they tried a few times per people who have looked at the film. But he is really ascending, as I say, like Graham, to being an important part down the road, isn't he?
Yeah, it was an important play as well, and I think they'd just gone for it on fourth down and fluffed it up. And, you know, it picked us up 3 points, that touchdown, which, you know, going into the game at the end, you know, was very, very welcome, you know, having to hold them having the 2-score lead was a big help. So, yeah, that was very handy.
Yeah, obviously, it wasn't all sweetness and light for the offense. Yet again, the running game failed to really gain any traction. While it did show flashes with Thomas Rawls and JD McKissick getting longest runs of 23 and 17 between them, it was another day where it's becoming an ever overshadowing issue, isn't it?
Yeah, it was putrid, for want of a better word. There's no other way to describe it. It's a really hard one because they obviously want to run. And they're going to keep doing it, I think. And I guess the logic is that if they do it enough, eventually they might wear the opposition down in the way that the Titans did to us. You know, Rawls's explosive run was probably one of his last runs of the game, I would imagine, that 20-odd yarder. Yeah. I don't remember having too many more plays after that. So I guess the viewpoint they could take is, you know, it works because eventually you just slam it and slam it and slam it, and eventually it works. But I'm not sold on it, and I don't know how they're going to approach it going forward, whether they're going to keep doing it and, for want of a better term, wasting plays, or they go away from it and hope that they can just put the season in Wilson's hands. That's probably what I would do at this stage, because I just don't see enough line play for it to work and enough quality at running back to make it work. But it's the Seahawks and it's Pete Carroll, and we know how he wants to play, and I can't imagine he's going to waver too much from it.
No, it's finding that middle ground with how the lack of success you find in rushing the ball, but also the success you get in with your quarterback throwing the ball. Another thing for Pro Football Focus is that so far this season on 3-step drops, it was something we've said in this podcast where Wilson takes 6-7 drops and just completely blows up the O-line. But when Wilson takes 3-step drops, he's second in the league with completion percentage at 78.3% when he's quick to get the ball out of his hands. Drew Brees is far and away number one in that this year at 91.2% completion percentage, which is crazy when you think about it. Obviously, also the running game, 13 snaps on Thursday, and he's back on injury reserve. CJ Procise has got a unwanted game to injury ratio, isn't he now?
Yeah, it's such a shame for him. He's going to be one of those guys that is a pub quiz question in Seattle in the future by the looks of it. Who was the guy that sort of led you to a win in New England and then never heard from him again. I don't know how much more patience they can have with him. It's going to be very difficult. He was obviously such an exciting pick and showed such lovely flashes at the back end or middle of last season. But ultimately, how much can you rely on someone that is just available so little of the time? And you know, we're getting to a stage where now where it's not it's, the amount he's been injured, there's only so much you can put down to luck on that. He has just been out for such a long time, and it's becoming a waste of a roster spot.
Yeah, it is. But I think with CJ Perez, that's because he was a third-round pick, because it's a relatively high draft investment. That he's going to get as many chances as they can afford to give. I think you'd expect him to at least play out next, at least go through training camp next year and see how he does. But if he continues to break down, I mean, it's something we saw with people like Walter Thurman, who just had enough of rehabbing instead of playing, and they just kind of walked away from the game. But it is frustrating and a shame.
It's a shame.
Because he's shown in the little action he's got that he has the makeup to be something. Just his body just doesn't seem to agree with it, does it?
Yeah, and you know, right now only 4 of our 10 draft picks in last year's draft are on the roster. Which is, you know, doubly frustrating because we really need to get some play out with them.
Yeah, and 2 of them are injured, I believe. Yeah, on offensive line, can you kind of put an asterisk next to it, seeing as Dwayne Brown went out so early?
Yeah, I mean, Matt Tobin, I'm not sure if he was... I know he was signed as sort of a versatility guy, but was it left tackle that he was really earmarked for as number one spot? Yeah, any team playing with their third left tackle is going to get in trouble. I mean, look at the Cowboys with their second choice left tackle, how abused their offensive line got. So, you know, getting through the game, you know, at one point when it was 16-10, I thought we were going to lose because we lost Brown, which was hindering us on offense. We lost Sherman and Stanton, who is shite, obviously. He actually was not helped by some killer drops that we were pretty lucky that they got. So, excuse me, the offensive line was bad, but I think just getting through the game was a bonus for them.
Yeah, I mean, for Stanton, we're going to in a bit later. He basically just looked at Gresham and Fitzgerald, and if nothing else, he just kind of airmailed it over the deep threats. Some of his throws were an absolute abomination. But yeah, as we said, to kick it off, there were injuries definitely did blight everything we saw last Thursday. Obviously, the big one coming with Richard Sherman, who ends his near 6-year run of not missing a start, 96 games, I think it was, or 99?
It was 99.
99 games straight before his Achilles, which he cropped up on most injury reports over the last 4 or 5 weeks, with missing practices, with finally gave in. And if you want to hear how much he meant, all you had to do was listen to what Sherman said, and then also what Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson said about the Seahawks cornerback.
Yeah, I knew what was happening. I mean, it's been bothering me all season. So, you know, it's one of them things you just have to play through as long as you can. And then, you know, when it goes, it goes. You know.
Do you think you know it's going to rupture? Why keep playing? Why not sit out a couple of games?
Well, because every game matters in this league. You know, every game matters. You go out there and you play for your teammates. You go out there and try to give them all you got because they deserve it. That's what I did. You know, I wanted to give my team the best chance to win. You know, we were kind of beat up at corner anyway. Didn't really want to put the young guys out there and put them in a hard spot, so just battle.
How bad has the injury been this season?
It's been pretty rough, but, you know, just like anything else, you know, you can't make excuses. You got to play. You know, I was out there, so it was good enough to play.
What do doctors try to talk you out of that?
Doctors tried to talk me out of playing for years. You know, they tried to stop me many years, and they understand that, you know, I'm going to go out there and try to do everything I can to help my team. And, you know, it's not about anything but that. You know, it's I owe it to those guys and gave them everything I had.
Was this as you were making the tackle, or what point of that?
I kind of knew what the play was, you know, and I was going to make a break to catch a ball. You know, I was going to try to give me a pick. We were in cover 2. And once I put everything on it, I had gone pretty much the whole season not really making any drastic cuts. You know what I mean? I'm veteran enough. I know the plays enough where I was never in position where I had to make a super bad cut, or it would probably pop a long time ago. But I just thought I could get the ball, and once it popped, I, you know, it was just unfortunate I couldn't make the tackle.
You actually felt it pop?
Yeah.
Do you have to have surgery, or, you know, what's next?
Yeah, I'm sure that's the process. I think we got to let it heal let the swelling get out for a couple of days, and then go get it repaired, and then start the rehab process.
You've never missed a game. You've been
something you've been really proud of, to know you have to sit out now?
It's unfortunate. You know, it's unfortunate. It sucks. You know, if it was anything I could play with, I'd be out there. But, you know, Jay Lane and JC and the Rook, Shaq, they're all capable, and they'll do a great job, and I'll stay in the room and make sure they get all the coaching points and give them everything I got.
As a veteran leader, after you know you're hurt bad, what do you try to do on the sideline with everybody else?
I mean, we got a veteran team. You know, guys knew what they were doing. Guys were ready. Jay Lane's a veteran player. He's a starter in this league, so, you know, he stepped right in and played awesome. You just try to make sure you give them the tips that you got, give them the pointers, if any indicators that you see, and encourage them. You know what I mean? Obviously, I can't help them on the field anymore, so just give them encouragement.
What allows you to be able to do this? Here you are, you know you're facing a season end there, and you're still out there for your guys.
Because that's the reason why I was playing in the first place. You know, I was playing for my guys in the first place. So, you know, after you get hurt, it's not like, you know, they knew what I was playing for. You know, they knew I'm out there giving them everything I got. So.
Anything else, guys? Everybody seems to be pretty down, you know, for you. How do you sort of move it around?
Just got to stay positive.
Richard obviously just stayed on the sideline. He was, you could see him cheering later.
Unbelievable. He was coaching guys up throughout. He couldn't even walk. He's an extraordinary competitor and an extraordinary person.
6.5 years since Sherman hasn't been out there.
I don't even know. Yeah, I don't even know how to address that right now. He has been just a, you know, bastion of, you know, consistency and competitiveness and toughness, and, you know, through all of the stuff that, you know, we've worked through together and all of it, it's been awesome. You know, it's been hard. It's been challenging. He's been an extraordinary, almost iconic player, you know, in this league, and so he's gonna have to sit. You know, I mean, try not to go overboard on this, but that's just the way I feel about it, and we'll miss the heck out of him, and he'll be with us, I know, every step of the way when he can. And
we're catching quite a bit of the moments on the sideline of Richard Sherman talking to you guys, you in particular. What was that exchange that the two of you had on the sideline?
Well, I asked him what happened, and he told us, he told me, you know, the unfortunate news, man, and it's just, you know, so many people have said so many different things about, you know, whatever they said out there. You know, you ignore the noise, but the reality is, I love that guy to death, man, and it's reciprocal, you know. And I think more than anything, he puts in the work, and to see him go down, that's a heartbreaker for us, because, oh, you know, he's going to be a Hall of Fame corner, you know, and he's special. So you can't replace Richard Sherman, you know. But more than anything, you know, we have to have guys step up, and it was just a sentimental moment, because. And there's nobody that deserves everything, you know, when it comes to the football field, than Richard Sherman.
Yeah, obviously, that is most of Sherman's press conference directly after the game, and talking about how he's played through and how he just wanted to keep battling with his guys, and how the reaction of all the players we saw on the sideline when he was limping up and down after the injury. It is, as I said, it's pretty heartbreaking, isn't it, to hear that, and also to be missing that guy for the rest of the season, Adam.
Yeah, well, I said on one of the Facebook groups, it's quite a cool redemption story that he's had this year, given that a lot of people in the off season were saying he needs to be traded. You know, or they weren't too disappointed at seeing the rumors that he might have been traded, and you know, he's a cancer in the locker room, and he can't be trusted. And if you look at the outpouring of love he received from teammates and fans and other players. It just shows how important the guy is and how he sort of turned everything around. I mean, he's been an absolute model pro on and off the field this season. His play has been exceptional as always, barring, you know, the fact that you can say one Will Fuller play is the only thing that he got really done on, which was a crazy play in 10 games, is testament to the play that he put in. And he's going to be an enormous loss. Like, Earl Thomas is a huge loss as well, but I think we just take it for granted how brilliant his play is, and how he just shuts down an entire side of the field.
Yeah.
And it could make a huge difference, and I think it really could be a game breaker.
Yeah, I think I said to you over the weekend that it's with Thomas and Sherman, it's the back end of the field, or one half of the field, it's which one is more important. And unfortunately now we're going to see which one is more important. Obviously, The drop from Earl Thomas was sheer and alarming from him to Stephen Terrell. And we're now going to see what it's like from Sherman to Lane, or we'll get to in a sec, Byron Maxwell and Nico Thorpe. I mean, it's not a comfortable position or thought to have, but it's something we're going to live through. But if
these quarterbacks, like we've got some good quarterbacks to face, and they're going to know that Thomas is probably going to be trying to look out for both sides, trying to protect both sides now. And I worry that, you know, in the past, if a quarterback gave Thomas the eyes to Sherman's side, he'd probably trust Sherman can deal with it. But now I really worry that they could look, that the quarterback's going to look Sherman Thomas off with his eyes and just send it the other way, because Thomas now has to commit to protecting both sides of the field, which is a real worry.
Yeah, it is. It's obviously a run of starts which started by intercepting Andy Dalton's red line throw to AJ Green, and all the talk and all your mad bro and Aaron Andrews interview and everything. 99 games, it would have been cool to have the 100th on Monday night, but that will come, you'd hope, week one in 2018. And other injuries, as we said, was Dwayne Brown went out pretty early in the game, I think. I can't really remember exactly with what apparently is a high ankle sprain that Brown appears willing to play through, which if he, after what the Cardinals D-line did to the Cowboys' second choice left tackle and all of it really, that'd be a big plus moving into next Monday, wouldn't it?
Yeah, we'd need him. That we've got too many injuries to be, you know, able to go into that game and comfortably deal with that. Our left tackle, it's just not an option. We're gonna need him to play. Otherwise, we've got big problems in a game that is probably a season definer, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree. Also, on the defensive side, wasn't just Sherman who suffered injuries. Jarran Reed went out with a hamstring early on. I think he only played two plays in the game and went out, and seems a real doubt for this. And then it sounds like it's going to be a similar recovery time to what Earl Thomas has had. But he's been, as we said last week on the pod, he's becoming a star on the defense, and in run defense in particular. It's going to be a massive, massive loss in the middle of that D-line, isn't it?
Yeah, that's going to be a hard one to take. His play has been, like, to a different level of good this year.
Yeah.
And he's going to be a really tough one to lose, because that rotation we had there with Nazir Jones and, you know, the other guys up the middle, Sheldon Richardson, it was just really clicking. And he's going to be a sad loss if he's out for too many games.
Yeah, it does sound like, from what Pete Carroll said yesterday, that it would be this week, and wait and see this time next week ahead of the Niners game. But obviously, with all the focused attention on Richard Sherman limping up and down the sidelines, Cam Chancellor's injury issues were somewhat missed until after the game, as he's apparently suffered a stinger. And Pete Carroll saying yesterday that they're still not sure what the deal is with that. And like Reed, he sounds like he's going to be out this Sunday, with Earl Thomas not a certainty. I mean, facing the Falcons offense and the weapons they have without the three LOB, well, were last week the three remaining Legion of Boom guys, it's not a good mix, is it?
I think almost they have to say, you know, forget about the defense, we have to score four touchdowns somehow. And, you know, the plan should almost be, where can we get four touchdowns from, as opposed to how can we stop them? Because I just don't think it's going to be possible, to be honest. I think it's going to be a shootout, and we have to win it in a shootout if we're going to win it.
Yeah, I'd agree, but it's got the signs of being another Cliff Averill-esque issue, doesn't it? I mean, Pete Carroll was a bit downbeat when he talked about it yesterday.
I've never really known what this stinger is and what it actually means. And I always thought until last week it was just a word that Pete Carroll made up to describe like a knock. But you suggested otherwise. So I don't really know what it is and how it affects a guy. Is it a neck thing?
I think people can, in the comments or whatever, can disprove this. But I think it's an issue with the neck and the top of the spine. And it affects feeling. And I don't think it affects movement. I think it affects feeling and in the arms and just across the shoulder blades, I think. So it's kind of like he's lowered his head too much, and he's kind of, it's like a more severe concussion, but not to the head, more to the spine and neck, and all the nervous system does a job on the nervous system. I mean, we're seeing the impact of the severity of the one that Cliff Averill suffered 5-6 weeks ago, and it hopefully it isn't history repeating itself for Chancellor, because last Thursday was possibly his best game of the season, wasn't it? He was an absolute demon, especially in the run game.
Yeah, I mean, and also, like, you can't keep having players that you're paying big money to going down for a number of reasons. Like, you know, it's not their fault, but ultimately, you know, he doesn't play, and Brown doesn't play, and Sherman doesn't play. You've got about 40 million of your cap not playing, and yeah. You know that gives you a natural disadvantage, especially when, you know, they're four of the most important positions on the field.
Yeah, and also four of the most established starters on the team. But on the defensive side last Thursday, they didn't pick off Drew Stanton, but they got to him two times. But it was the run defense where they just completely shut down Adrian Peterson. As we heard from Rabel, another safety in back-to-back weeks. The first time, I think, since 1993, I think that's happened. But yeah, Peterson finished after his big day against the Niners, 21 rushes for just 29 yards. And on a day where Peterson runs for 1 point, whatever yards that is per carry, he was still the leading running back rusher on the game, which is says a lot for our run game. But it was a pretty good defensive performance. So Bobby Wagner continues to keep his name in the hat for end-of-season honours, doesn't he?
Yeah, he was great. The general just like discipline and containment of the team was really good. The second you got picked on a bit, and they were fortunate with a couple of drops that I think JJ Nelson especially had. But, you know, overall, it was just such a horrible night from start to finish that it was just get out of there with a W and we'll see where we go from there.
Yeah. Also on defense, Deion Jordan had his first sack as a Seahawk, his first sack in the NFL for about 3 years. And if he continues to show moves like that, just completely ran over the Cardinals' left tackle, it's another tip of the cap to Schneider and just his ability to make moves and bring in players like Deion Jordan, like Dwight Freeney, who yet again caused some chaos to the team, isn't it? I mean, it's just the pro scouting at the Seahawks is pretty good, the ability to bring players and put them in positions to do what Deion Jordan did last Thursday.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of an archaic idea, but Deion Jordan is absolutely enormous. I mean, he looks in the same way as like Clowney looks too big to play the game. Like, he looks like he's a different species of human. And ultimately, if you can get the guy's mind right and get the guy in good shape, he's just going to run through people. I mean, in the same way as Jimmy Graham against a safety is a mismatch, Deion Jordan against just about anyone looks a mismatch at the minute. And hopefully he can take that into the game. I mean, obviously, the best way to alleviate a banged up secondary is pass rush. So if they can continue to keep the rotation going and get to the quarterback on a regular basis, that's the best way to you know, get rid of problems or just sort of put a cap on the problems we're going to have without Sherman. So keep rushing because it was great to watch. And right now the onus is on Chris Richard more than anyone to come up with something that that he hasn't been able to do before. And you know, it is a tough time for Richard, and I think we're going to know after this next month or so what he's about.
Yeah, also Pete Carroll, because his specialty is defensive backs. And after the issues we have, obviously, with Stephen Terrell coming in to replace Earl Thomas last year, there's a lot on him. You see with Bill Belichick, where it doesn't matter the pieces, it all works the same. It's kind of the same for Carroll, isn't it, in this defensive backfield? Is that fair?
Yeah, it has to be. It has to be. This is where he's going to earn his cheese. So, it's in a way, it's sort of that morbidly exciting thing where you want to see what it looks like, even though you don't know it could be horrible. Yeah. Let's see, and it'll be interesting to see how it goes. But the season feels very much on a knife edge for me at the minute.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think until we see it, I can't really say it's over or everything's fine, because as you say, it's the proof is in the pudding and all that. Yeah, with all the downbeat energy coming out of the stadium in Arizona last Thursday, with all the Sherman injury, obviously the headline as we said, and all the other injuries, the team has made some moves. They placed CJ Process, as we said, on injured reserve and seem to hope to have him back at some point if the team go deep into the playoffs in the next 6 weeks or so. And in his place, they called up former South Carolina running back Mike Davis, something I call for. Quite a few weeks with how the run game was struggling, it just made sense. Mike Davis was someone who on the NFL UK mock I've ran for the last couple of years on Twitter. I did select the last time I was Seahawks general manager in 2015. He spent last year with the San Francisco 49ers after being a fourth or fifth round draft pick for them, and seemed to be very, very pissed off with how the team, that team, dealt with him towards the end of his time in San Francisco. The team also added former Stanford Cardinal cornerback, who's now listed as a safety, Alex Carson, is someone to finally, after all the drafting Seahawks stuff I've done, is someone I actually profiled on that series. So it's a long time coming. And obviously, the team did make one other move. They say you should never go back, but this former Legion of Boom member has done just that.
Again, a four-man rush going for Cruz. Maxwell made the interception, and he stepped out of bounds. Byron Maxwell with his second interception in as many weeks. He took it away from Victor Cruz, and the Seahawks have yet another turnover. Again, a four-man rush going for Cruz. Maxwell made the interception, and he stepped out of bounds. Byron Maxwell with his second interception in as many weeks. He took it away from Victor Cruz, and the Seahawks have yet another turnover.
Yeah, Byron Maxwell is back in Seattle. The loose-fitting long sleeves are back. Adam, the pajamas you thought may have left with Jermaine Curse, but they're back.
Yeah, and it's going to be fun. I think I said when he left that it was probably going to be a bad move for him to leave, because the system that he played in seemed to work. Whether or not he still got the ability he had 3-4 years ago is, you know, to be seen. But I think it's certainly better than, you know, bringing someone like, you know, having the Kerry Williams problem of bringing someone that doesn't know the system and have a clue what they're doing. Yeah. And it's certainly better than not a human being. So yeah, I'll take it.
Yeah, definitely. Last year, there's a lot of talk on Twitter and all the rest of it that he has not been good. And while he wasn't at the level he was in 2013 for the Seahawks, last year in the AFC East in particular, he had the fewest yards allowed per coverage snap at 0.84. Obviously, the Jets were a mess, and he led Corey White and Eric Rowe in that. But there's a lot of, it seems, misconceptions about Maxwell's play in teams that don't appear to be very good and don't appear to be run by people who don't really appear to know what they're doing, especially with the Dolphins and Bills over the last few weeks, Adam.
Yeah, we're hardly talking about, you know, in Chip Kelly's Eagles, we're hardly talking about the greatest run organisations in sports history, let's be honest.
Yeah.
So let's see what he's got. Yeah. As I say, it's going to be better than no one. Yeah. If it means that, you know, Lane gets kicked back outside and Maxwell's the slot, or I don't know how they'll do it.
Yeah.
I'd rather have him than not, or at least if it's for one game and he gets cut, I'd rather just see what we've got just in case it works.
Yeah, definitely. As I said to you yesterday on WhatsApp, that if it does work, it really does set the table for quite a cheap defensive backfield for the Seahawks into next year, because you'd expect if it does work, it does pay off, that there'll be moves made to really find money to use elsewhere. As we said with Jimmy Graham, Paul Richardson maybe wanting and deserving to get paid. This defensive backfield, if Maxwell pans out, could be the place to find that money, couldn't it?
Yeah. I want to give everyone an opportunity to try and save this season, because at the minute I think we're on the ropes, and if you can give me someone that will help turn the season into a good thing, then I'm all for it. So let's give it a go, see how it works, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah. If it wasn't certain before, though, after that game, the Arizona Cardinals are definitely out of playoff contention in what is a very top-heavy and going to be interesting competitive NFC, aren't they? With Drew Stanton's injured, I think. Is it Blaine Gabbert starting for them this week?
Yeah, I think that'll be the end of them. But I'm not, you know, I think once David Johnson went down, it was always going to be very tricky. And then with Palmer going down again, a bit of a double whammy.
Yeah.
They're struggling.
Yeah. Quickly, though, before we move on to this week's primetime game, one to watch on either side of the ball, one to praise on either side of the ball.
Let's go with Jimmy Graham and Naz Jones, who is becoming a really good fixture on that defensive line, and someone we couldn't really be doing without at the minute.
Yep. Moving on, though, with that game against Cardinals in the rear view, we move on to another Sunday night without the Seahawks as they play on Monday night, hosting the Atlanta Falcons, is what I believe is the military appreciation night. We were there for the last Monday night and last military appreciation night, Adam. It's pretty cool place to be, isn't it?
Yeah, the flyover was really cool. Yeah. Everyone's getting very excited, and yeah, Monday night in Seattle is not a lot better than that.
No. Yeah, but Matt, to help us preview the Falcons game after they come off the back of what was a demolition job on the Dallas Cowboys minus Zeke Elliott and Tyron Smith, I spoke to one of my mates and the mainstay of NFL UK, Mark, Mr. Grant Harrison, who is a very happy and positive Atlanta Falcons fan. Here's what Grant has to say. It's that time again on the Pedestrian Podcast where we venture over to the opposite sideline with Monday night's game against the Atlanta Falcons, a team we've played on numerous occasions in the past few years. Obviously, last time we played, they ended our season in the divisional round of last year's playoffs, but we did beat them last time they came to CenturyLink Field, and they do that this weekend as well. To help me talk through and give an insight into the Falcons in 2017, I'm joined by one of my pals, one of the good brothers of Graps Twitter, Mr. Grant Harrison. How are we, sir?
Hello, mate. I'm good, thank you. You doing well?
I'm not doing too badly. As I said, my confidence as the game edges closer is waning by the second as injury reports amassed, and the presence of Julio Jones is still there. So.
Still there, and they've started to surprisingly throw the ball to him. Sark, in his infinite wisdom at the start of the year, decided that was obviously too easy, so he decided to set himself a bit of a challenge for trying to run an offense without the best receiver in football. But no, I think he's coming around to throwing the boys some balls now.
Yeah, he is, and 2 weeks after I traded for him in fantasy as well, so
very well. Always the way.
Yeah. So how did you become a Falcons fan, and why the Falcons?
I think, like most Falcons fans that aren't in the States, and to be fair, probably quite a lot of Falcons fans that are not from Atlanta, to be honest, the Mike Vick experience got me. Saw the Falcons playing on Sky Sports over here, saw Mike Vick and was like, oh, that's exciting. And that turned out to be his last season in Atlanta. finished the season flipping off the fans, and never played another snap for the team. So the first proper season I had watching them was Joey Harrington, Byron Leftwich, and Chris Redman. So, heaven knows why I'm still watching.
Yeah, I think that's the same with Ollie. We had on a few weeks ago talking about the Colts. His first season was Peyton's last one with a fully functioning neck, I think. So, it's all about timing, isn't it? And the timing was a bit...
It is. I think...
A bit off.
Some people are just lucky with their sports teams. Get all the happiness in the world with them. And others just sign up for the sadness, I think.
Yeah, well, as you know, I'm a Coventry City fan. Adam, who also does the podcast, he's a Spurs fan. And next Tuesday, I'm at Stevenage, and he's in Dortmund. So it's the rich and the poor.
On one night. You wouldn't have it any other way, though, would you?
I don't know. Just one trip would be fun, I think. But yeah, so obviously, there's a lot. I mean, last year I saw you the day after the divisional game, and you, in all your trolling wisdom, turned up in the Julio Jones jersey, which was a bit harsh. And then obviously your whole world and Twitter disappeared 2 weeks later.
Ended up the same for both of us. It's even sadder for me. So,
I think I saw you the week before the Super Bowl. And I told you, I don't think I said enjoy it, because it's a pretty wild week, and I didn't quite expect to see that. That is something that you probably know, the team especially, are never going to get over, are they?
No. They're never going to get over at all. I mean, it was always going to be difficult with Shanny leaving anyway, but with that baggage on top of it, I think it might actually be useful, the fact that we've been fairly poor this season. I think if we'd gone sort of 7-1, 6-2, something like that, and there's a realistic chance of another sort of one seed and progress into the Super Bowl, I think that could have hung over them. But I think by being where we're at now, it kind of alleviates the pressure. And if they do, if we win Monday, I think probably the pressure is going to start coming back on. But at the moment, yeah. I think the fan base is fairly realistic in terms of not expecting anything this year. And you know, with DQ in charge, we're still sort of moving in the right direction, despite obviously the worst thing to ever happen in sports.
Yeah, I mean, well, I thought Malcolm Butler was bad, but Jesus. So once you reactivated your Twitter, how did the off-season go with all that hanging over?
I fairly switched off in the off-season. I obviously followed the draft, and we had a quiet free agency period. I mean, apart from Dontari Poe and Andre Roberts, it's fairly quiet, and obviously tax fireworks on draft night, but no, I removed myself a lot from Falcons Twitter over the summer.
Yeah. So what were your what was your confidence like heading into season? Or was it a case of after that, don't really care?
A bit of the don't really care, but I was relatively excited. I mean, there's a lot of young pieces on that defense, and I think you started to see over the last couple of weeks them coming around. But I didn't. Obviously, we knew there'd be a drop off on offense, but I don't think we were quite expecting it to be as bad as it's been. I mean, some of the play calling from Sark has been very, very questionable. Like I said, Julio's not been getting targeted. He's somehow forgotten that Tevin Coleman was the best receiving back in the league last year and decided to target Taylor Gabriel in the middle of the field in contested catch situations. So it's been essentially random and not the best, but fingers crossed it's coming around a little bit now.
Yeah, you said a couple of weeks ago that that you think the Falcons hoped that no one would realise that they'd replace Shanahan with Sarkisian, and when people did realise it was too late.
Yeah, I think they announced it so quickly after the Super Bowl loss. I didn't know for a couple of weeks afterwards due to me not being on Twitter. But it's not been smooth sailing so far. But so the Cowboys' defense has been pretty decent so far this year, even when Sean Lee's not been in the lineup. So hopefully that's a sign of things to come. I mean, Coleman got a running game going without Freeman in the backfield. So usually I'd be a bit worried about Free being out this week, but Coleman did very, very well last week, and fingers crossed he'll continue that.
Yeah,
Seattle.
Yeah, like with most teams with a quarterback, obviously Seattle's obviously in the same boat with Wilson. Does the offense live and die by Matt Ryan, or is it more of a case with Julio, the man that is the signpost for that?
I'd say it goes through Ryan still. I mean, people look at his numbers this year and say, oh, maybe he's not having the best of years, but he's thrown 8 picks. I saw something from PFF the other day that only 2 of them have been on throws that they'd say deserve a turnover. I mean, there's been so many random things happened this year that it's been just the complete opposite of last year. Like the Bills game we lost, essentially it was a forward pass, not a fumble, that gets returned for a touchdown. Game's over then. Just random players bouncing off people's hands. I mean, even the Cowboys game the other day started with Sanu being hit right in the hands, ball pops up, picked off. Cowboys pick up the ball in the red zone and we're down 7-0. So I think Ryan's been pretty damn good, to be honest, for a team that's been struggling a little bit on offense.
Yeah. So obviously, as I said, the other guy on the offense is Julio Jones. You say he's not been targeted much, but he still managed to get over 700 yards with still, 6-7 weeks left of the season. I mean, he is all the talk for Antonio Brown. He is WR1, isn't he?
Yeah, to me he is. I mean, he can take over a game in one play, essentially. I mean, the physicality is what separates him from Brown for me. I mean, Antonio is a target monster. He is Pittsburgh's offense, but I don't know how you line up against Julio and think you can beat him one-on-one.
Yeah.
I mean, even with Sherman on the field last year, I think we still went after him. I mean, I think that a lot of that was due to play design and whatnot, but having a true number one like that really does help.
Yeah, the fact that we lose Sherman, it sounds like Cam may be questionable as well, and then Julio Jones and Mohamed Sanu roll into town is not the ideal mix for Seahawks fans over the weekend.
No, Sanu has been a really, really pleasant surprise. And when he signed for the Falcons last year, the signing was panned pretty much universally on Twitter due to his work in Cincinnati, but he's a legitimate wide receiver too in the NFL. He's got good hands, he's tough over the middle, and he's a good run blocker.
Yeah.
And to be honest, five years, $35 million in today's market. Who cares about that when Tavon Austin's the 5th highest paid receiver in the league?
Yeah, and I think he's WR5 for the Rams, isn't he, as well?
Yeah.
So with Sanu, obviously Austin Hooper is the guy at tight end. You called him a yak god a couple of days ago. It's him and Hunter Henry seem to be having a similar story in the second year. They haven't had that breakout that you'd expect him to have had by now.
Yeah, I was expecting a real breakout season for Hooper. I mean, he's been a bit hit and miss in terms of hands, but if he catches the ball, he's very, very tricky to bring down. Couple of really great first down conversions against the Cowboys where he's receiving the ball a few yards before the first down marker, and he's making players miss. He's stiff arming people. He's very good with the ball in his hands. I think it's just a little bit getting him involved in the offense a bit more, to be honest. Yeah. Like I say, play calling's been a bit eclectic, a bit random. I think one of the things that Shanahan did so well last year was using formations that set things up later in the game.
Yeah.
Sark's not really been able to get into that sort of rhythm, but I think Ryan trusts Hooper, but I think it's actually having the ball a lot. I mean, I think in terms of possessions, the Falcons are towards the worst in the league. But on a yards per play basis, the offense is still pretty damn good.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think he's the one who I thought would be a bigger impact when he came into the league. Running the ball, you mentioned obviously Devonta Freeman appears. I mean, has it been confirmed that he's out for this weekend with his concussion?
Not confirmed, but there's talk that he's going to miss a couple of weeks. So I would imagine a very heavy dose of Tevin Coleman and a slightly smaller dose of Teron Ward, who, despite looking not particularly like an NFL running back, is not too bad, actually. I mean, he's obviously not a player to the level of Devonta Freeman, but for a guy that's going to get 5-6 carries, not the end of the world. And Coleman looked good against the Cowboys on Sunday.
Yeah, and obviously, as you mentioned, they're not getting the ball in their hands as a receiver. Only 17 catches for Coleman, 19 for Freeman. That could be something where the Seahawks are going to have to be aggressive, you'd expect, with the questions in the secondary, where they really could kill the Seahawks on Monday by dumping the ball off to Coleman, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's a Coleman-Hooper game, to be honest. I mean, Julio's going to get his targets, but it's going to be where they get yards for elsewhere. I mean, Taylor Gabriel came alive on Sunday as well, which was nice to see. Again, his kind of usage hasn't been the best this year, but if you get the ball in his hands, he's electric and can make things happen.
Yeah. So what's the Falcons' offensive line? Obviously, there's a lot of weekly, hourly talk about that for the Seahawks. What's the O-line looking like this year for the Falcons?
I think in the grand scheme of things, the Falcons' O-line is perfectly fine. I think last year Chris Chester at right guard was a nice veteran presence. When he got to the second level, really made things happen in the run game. Wes Schweitzer, who stepped in for him as a sixth round pick out of San Jose State 2 years ago, it's been up and down. He's not been terrible by any means, but he does struggle against power moves and whatnot. I think he has had a very, very tough go of it though in terms of matchups, and I'd imagine it's not going to be much easier this week, even though you did say Jerron Reed might be out.
I think
it'd be a big boost for the Falcons.
Yeah, he's really emerging. Obviously, he's becoming as one the top run defender, but he's getting the pass rush boost, and him and Nazir Jones are really becoming a pretty nice tandem on the early downs. But on the defensive side, they're going up against our Odeyabushi and Ethan Posick and hopefully Dwayne Brown is the defensive line, which has Vic Beasley, who had a pretty stellar 2016, but his injury has kind of handcuffed him this year. Is that fair?
Yeah, injuries, and he's played a bit of Sam linebacker as well, where he looked pretty good, to be honest, dropped into coverage a fair bit. I think the Falcons' defensive line being a bit deeper this year has helped. Yeah, I mean, team pass rush is a lot better than it was last year, despite Vic not having the stellar numbers he had last time around. I mean, you got Brooks Reed, who's got 4 or 5 sacks this year, and getting out of Brooks Reed is, at this point in his career, is pretty damn good.
Yeah.
Tack's been an impact rookie, even though he's only had 2 sacks. He's looked like a very good run defender so far. And then you've got the man Adrian Claiborne.
Yeah, who was it? $700,000 bonus he got because he had
$750,000. He gets a further million if he gets another couple of sacks. So if Dwayne Brown doesn't line up this week,
it's a good day to be Claiborne's bank manager.
Certainly is. I mean, probably didn't help himself this week saying he's only got 1 pass rush move and he used it every single time against the Cowboys. But I'd imagine they knew that and they still couldn't stop it. So, it's a deep D line. I mean, we've talked about the pass rushes on the edge, but interior wise, Grady Jarrett and Dontari Poe, I think you're going to struggle to find a better on paper anyway tandem. I mean, Poe's not been a massive impact player so far this year, but Grady Jarrett's how he was available in the 5th round still baffles me to this day.
Yeah, Jarrett was someone I really wanted to see us take a run at, and it's quite annoying that he's probably going to ruin Odeyabushi's day next Monday. But with that rotation, all the names and numbers that they're getting, it does does have a very 2013 to 15 Seahawks feel, where they had a massive rotation with Bennett, Averill, Red Bryant, Clinton McDonald and stuff. And obviously, a lot of that comes through Dan Quinn. He's, despite the, what was it, 5-4 you are? Is that what you said?
Yeah, 5-4. Yeah.
He's got a job for life, isn't he, at Atlanta? Because what he's done over the last 2-3 years?
It's going to take something very very bad to get rid of DQ. Mike Smith had two terrible seasons at the end of his tenure that he probably shouldn't have had. Mm. It's a fairly loyal ownership with Art Blank. Dimitrov's worked really, really well with DQ. I mean, if you look at our draft since DQ got into Atlanta, it's very, very good indeed on both sides of the ball, to be honest. I think they've got a vision for how they want their football team to be built, and they're going ahead and doing it.
Yeah, Deion Jones and Keanu Neal are, especially Deion Jones, who just flies around, they are the heart, the spine of that defense, aren't they?
I think we probably expected a bit more from Deion Jones this year. The team struggled a bit against the run, to be honest. He's obviously a very talented player, but I think it's just a bit of consistency there. I think if you look in at second-year players that have been very, very impactful for the Falcons this year, you can't look any further than Devondre Campbell, the fourth rounder in the previous draft out of Minnesota. He had corrective eye surgery over the offseason because somehow he was playing without full 2020 vision.
Oh.
And I think it's been a massive thing for him. He's been incredible this year in terms of coverage. He's been pretty good against the run, and as a blitzer, I think and he's come on a lot as well. So I think you're seeing a lot of growth out of those second year guys. I mean, Deion Jones has been a bit better over the last couple of weeks, and Keanu Neal's just, if you're going to spend a first round pick on a box safety, I think he is the perfect guy there.
He gets a lot of, I guess, I think a lot of advice, but he gets a lot of comparisons to Cam Chancellor, doesn't he? And it seems to be something he thrives with and welcomes.
I think when you draft those positions, the less glamorous positions early on in the draft, you want those guys to be able to be in and around the football. I mean, the Falcons only have two picks this year, but we've had several called back. But forced fumbles-wise, if you watch the Panthers-Falcons game the other week, Keanu forced two in the first half. And if he's hitting you, you're going to know that you're hit.
Yeah.
He's very, very firm. And I think in the past, guys like Roy Williams, for example, who've been really, really good box defenders from that strong safety position, have struggled in coverage. But you don't want Keanu going one-on-one with a wide receiver or anything like that. But most high ends he's able to match up with and can certainly do his bits in zone as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite annoying, the regularity where no-name tight ends get 60-70 yards and a touchdown against the Seahawks. Despite all the quality of the defense, it is an annoying constant. Obviously, the Seahawks are going to be finding out on Monday night what it's like to have to defend that entire field without Richard Sherman. Obviously, the Falcons do have Baby True, Desmond Trufant, the former Husky, who's one of my favorite defensive players in the league. He does the same that Sherman does for the Seahawks, and he kind of just shuts down one side of the field, or is it?
He moves around a little bit more, to be honest. Sometimes you'll see him go into the slot, so fingers crossed he'll be on Doug for a lot of the game on Monday.
Yeah.
Sometimes, though, he will just lock down his side of the field, like you say. Obviously, depends whether they go with the sort of man coverage on the outside or the more of a zone team. It's varied a bit this year.
Yeah.
Secondary-wise, though, in terms of the corners, Rob Alford, you're going to get a penalty out of him now and again, but as far as number two corners go, he's pretty damn good. And again, he's another guy that manages to get his hands on the football quite well.
Mm.
I don't know whether your offense features a lot of quick slants or anything like that. I haven't watched you guys enough this year. Alford is a guy that thrives on that kind of game.
Yeah, we're trying to petition Daryl Bevel to take out all quick slants of the playbook. Because we did it in, obviously, a couple of years ago. We did it twice against the Redskins, and one was picked off and one nearly was. So it's not something that's going quite well for us. So, but yeah, Alford already on the season has 11 pass breakups, which is quite a number, and Trufant is right behind him with 7. I mean, interception number's down, but that is a pretty impressive when you're just stopping the other team completing passes. It's just like
if True could catch, I think a lot more people would know about how damn good he is.
Yeah.
the Green Bay game earlier in the season where he scored that touchdown, picked off Rodgers as well. I think that got him a bit of national recognition that I think he's been lacking despite his pretty damn good work over the course of his career.
Yeah.
I mean, even if when you go down to Nickelback, Brian Poole was a pretty good undrafted pickup last year out of Florida. He's tough. He's not going to stick to you like glue or anything, but for a number three corner in the NFL, I think there's a lot worse that you can do there. Yeah. He's very, very physical against the run, so it's been frustrating this year. I mean, the Falcons defense on paper, I really like it. I mean, Ricardo Allen's the unsung man in that secondary, having to play the Earl Thomas role, as it were, and I think unless you're Earl Thomas, you're going to struggle at that a little bit. But Ricardo Allen's he's a talented player as well. He converted cornerback out of Purdue. He'll come up and hit you as well. I think it could very well be a season where we look back and think, oh, it could have been so much more with all these guys coming into their primes.
Yeah, we kind of had it. We had it a little bit on the way to the 49, but after 48, there was like a 6-week hangover kind of thing, and it appears that obviously it seems to be happening. We're still in the hangover from 49, so sorry, Grant. But yeah, so what is your confidence ahead of Monday?
I'd like to see us play a close game. I think it's probably going to be one of those ones where it's a one score victory for the Seahawks. The Falcons probably hurt them just short, like we did last year in Seattle.
Yeah.
If they can compete and show that they can do a few things on offense this week against, on paper, a very good defense, I'll be a happy man.
Yeah. So from the outside, you say you haven't seen much of the Seahawks. What are your thoughts on the Seahawks this year and in general?
I think one of the areas the Falcons have struggled is stopping the run. We struggle to get off the field in those kind of situations.
You
so
have no
after
issue
what,
doing
after
that.
After what I've seen you guys do this year, I'm fairly confident that we'll be okay.
Yeah. I think Dontari Poe could go to the Pro Bowl on the back of Monday's run stats. I think.
Yes,
it's
pathetic. I'll never want to question Russell Wilson though. As long as he's on the field, you guys have got more than a fighting chance.
Yeah.
I don't think we've changed much on paper since the playoff game in January. So,
yeah.
If the Falcons can get out to an early lead, pin their ears back and rush the passer, then it's a different game than having to stop the run and try and get the offense back out on the field.
Yeah, I mean, what so you saw in quite a lot of movies with the Saints. What's the Falcons' track history like with Jimmy Graham?
Oh, Jimmy Graham killed the Falcons for years and years and years. I'll be playing him in daily fantasy this week. I don't think necessarily he'll go off for 100 yards or anything like that, but I think you can pencil him for a touchdown right now.
He had three catches for 27 and two touchdowns last week against
Cardinals. I think you can probably pencil in JD McKissick as well. obviously he spent some time with us last season in the preseason, and it seems like he's a talented kid, and he's coming on a bit with you guys, isn't he?
I was at the Giants game, and he just took a handoff from Russell Wilson. You just go, wow, he is quick. It's so sudden. He just comes out of nowhere. He's only a small player, but yeah, we need to find ways to get him in because rules. And we'll call up Mike Davis this week to get no gains on 1st and 10 and 2nd and 10. So.
Yeah, I liked Mike Davis coming out of college.
Yeah, I mean, he seems pretty pissed off with how the 49ers treated him as well. So maybe there's a bit of
I think if you look at the Falcons' run D over the past 3 weeks or so, it's been a bit better. Like, they managed to get off the field against the Panthers, just couldn't finish it off.
Yeah.
Against the Jets, we bottled them up. And against the Cowboys, I mean, Alfred Morris had one long run for Alfred Morris for 25 yards, but apart from that, we did bottle them up. Mobile quarterbacks, though, I think Russ is probably about to have probably his best rushing day of the season against us.
Yeah,
they struggled against Dak on Sunday night. Cam killed them off.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably where we're going to see a few third and long conversions for the Seahawks and a few angry tweets from myself.
Yeah, I'll just go through your defensive stat. You've got Atuba Rubin. I completely missed that. He's been a nice addition,
and we're playing and Ben Garland last year, who managed to get a sack and a safety on Russ in the playoffs. He's a right guard and a defensive tackle, so I don't think you're in the best of situations when you've got guys like that. when you can get someone like Rubin off the waiver wire, I think he's been a big boost the past few weeks.
Yeah, he was quite good. He had a couple of plays where he'd run 20, 30 yards downfield and make a tackle on a running back screen or something. But obviously when you're signing Shadon Richardson, you don't really need Tuva Rubin. I think that's everything. I think we covered every aspect. Score prediction for Monday? I think he says Sunday then.
27-21 Seahawks.
Okay, I think I'm going to go 34-31, but as I said, my confidence is...
I think that's bold to think we will get 31 in Seattle.
Yeah, I know, but we have no idea what the secondary is going to look like.
Well, so. If Byron Maxwell is the only member of the Legion of Boom out there, then yeah, I can see maybe 31. if Erland can play, I think it might just be a bridge too far for the Falcons at this point in the season.
Yeah, and then so if it does go Seahawks' ways, is it just a case of just ruining Saints and Panthers' season for the rest of the season for the Falcons?
Yeah, definitely. Doing that and ruining our draft pick as well. to be fair, looking at the rest of the schedule, Saints twice, Panthers, Vikes, you boys, I'm probably looking at like a 9-7, 8-8 kind of season if things don't go to plan on Monday.
Yeah, and I hope maybe onto a new OC next year and get rid of Sarkisian, or?
I think so. I mean, Kubiak's been talking about coming back to the game, going somewhere where there's an established quarterback and a decent roster. After the success we had with Shanahan, I would be more than in favour of Gary Kubiak coming into the Falcons. But nobody expected Sark, so who knows what the plan is.
It was a rapid redemption from Sarkisian from the AA meetings to Alabama and then to the Falcons. It's
despite losing the national title game last year and his one game as OC. But to be fair, looking at that, I don't think we can put Deshaun Watson and his brilliance on Sark.
No, you can, but it possibly would be slightly unfair. So, where can people follow you on the social media, Mr. Harrison, if they want to get angry tweets on Monday and Mad Men tweets on Tuesday?
just follow me on Twitter, GrantHarrison91. He's not always angry. There might be some positivity. We'll see how Monday goes. And
if there's positivity, it won't be about sport. Is that a fair thing?
No, I like other sports, just not my own teams. And if you're a football, soccer fan, Manchester City are playing, you'll get a lot of positivity out of there.
a Pep truther.
Pep Appreciation Society. Follow me on there. Probably the best place to find me. I'm not writing anywhere at the moment, so just enjoy the tweets.
Massive thanks for jumping on after escaping a traffic jam. Enjoy the game to a certain extent on Monday. And thank you very much for coming on the Ped Pod.
Cheers, Stu. Thanks for having me on, mate.
Fires near side. Touchdown. It's Graham.
Bevel, the offensive coordinator, did. You open up the formation, it's going to reveal really quick what coverage they're in. You see them in their zone defense. Let's take Jimmy Graham to the flat and see if Keanu Neal can tackle him. Jimmy Graham and that big body gets in the end zone. Impressive championship-like opening drive for the Seattle Seahawks. Yeah,
massive thanks to Grant for jumping on and joining us and talking his Falcons. But last time we played the Falcons, Adam, the name of the pod was Impending Doom. It's that on a smaller scale, isn't it, this Monday?
Yeah, I mean, the way that the two teams played and injuries, whatnot, in the last week has really not helped my positivity. I mean, having Devonta Freeman out will obviously be a big help for Seattle, even though they haven't quite got the running game going just yet. I think going into this week, seeing our injuries, they're... reignited offense and their very good looking defensive line against a weak left tackle. I have to say I'm very, very concerned about this game.
I am as well. I mean, Julio Jones and Mohamed Sanu are two big, long, physical wide receivers, and if there's any test for a non-Richard Sherman defensive backfield, it could not come much tougher than these two, could it, right off the bat?
No, and Taylor Gabriel and Tevin Coleman out the backfield. You know, there's plenty of guys there that can catch passes and hurt you.
Yeah, and then you've got Austin Hooper, seems a pretty much a yak demon as well at tight end. But no Freeman, as you said, a second concussion this season, but with Tevin Coleman, and it's still a pretty good running team, isn't it?
Yeah, and they, you know, they can run up the gut, and they can use the screen very well, and they can run outside the tackles. When they click, for me, they can be as good an offense to watch as there is in the game. But I guess we'll have to see what level they're at this year with Sark as opposed to Shanahan, see how much they have clicked over the last couple of weeks, and hopefully outscore them, because I think we're going to need this game to make the playoffs, I have to say.
Yeah, I think, well, especially after the last home game, I think it really put us behind the eight ball with this one. But with all the early struggles, I mean, Grant is not very positive or happy with Steve Sarkisian running his team's offense. Matt Ryan is, over the last couple of weeks, has started to find his MVP groove, hasn't he?
Yeah, and by the people that I, you know, look out for on Twitter and wherever, they never seem to suggest that Matt Ryan was actually the issue, more that the scheme wasn't helping anyone get open and, you know, complete passes that they were doing last year. I mean, you can't legislate for the drop that Julio Jones had against Carolina. But, you know, Matt Ryan has always been one of those guys that is probably plays to the level of his surrounding talent as opposed to make his surrounding talent particularly better.
Yeah.
So let's see. We need to try and shut it all down, and we need to hit him, because when we hit him in the first half of the regular season game last year, he was like a quivering leaf.
Yeah, it is. That is definitely the big thing. Just giving him little time to move and just make the subtle movements that him and the quarterbacks like him, Brady, Rogers make. It's going to be just getting him off his spot, and really there's going to be little patience for Falcons fans with Sarkisian's offense, just adding to those frustrations, and how annoyed they're going to be is going to be a big thing on Monday. But on the defensive fight, so for the Falcons, with Dan Quinn, the forward DC in Seattle, it's going to look somewhat familiar. They do, like the Seahawks did with Dan Quinn, fly around, don't they?
Yeah, they're fun to watch. They got loads of speed in all positions. They used like things like the safety and corner blitzes probably better than we do, and I'd actually like to see us do more of it. I think I said to you last week, I can barely think of any that we've done this season, just to mix it up a little bit. And yeah, they're a fun team to watch when it's all clicking.
Yeah.
You know, we've said, not that it matters to this game particularly, but the fact that the way the Super Bowl transpired last year, that they can say as much as they want that it's not in their head, but it will be forever in their heads, unfortunately for them. And whether we can tap into that a little bit, we'll have to see. But it's going to be two good teams on Sunday on Monday going at it, and it should be a fun game for the neutral, that's for sure.
Yeah, it definitely should be a more even-keeled game than the Monday night game was this past week, where the Panthers just ran all over the Dolphins. But the Seahawks on the offensive side, yet again, staying out your own way. Russell Wilson's got to improve again from last week, isn't he? I mean, he improved from Redskins to Cardinals. He's got to be close to what he did against the Falcons, all the injury issues on the defensive side.
Yeah, I mean, we end up being harsh on Wilson because there's just so much on his plate.
Yeah.
But ultimately, if you want to win a Super Bowl, you've got to be exceptional. And we have to demand exceptional play from Wilson. That's the only way we're gonna do what we want to do this year, is if he plays out of his mind. And he certainly can do it. And he's got to do it again this week.
Yeah, and the defensive line for the Falcons is coming off a day where Adrian Claiborne had 6 sacks, also netted him $750,000 on a bonus the Falcons probably didn't think he'd get, as he went from 2 sacks to 8 sacks and passed the threshold on a contract bonus on Sunday, where he absolutely destroyed the Dallas Cowboys' second choice left tackle. As we said with Dwayne Brown earlier, that's a scary blueprint to watch and hope it isn't repeated, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if that is going to happen, you're going to have to send a tight end over there to chip or whatever. Rawls actually had a few really nice blocks in the backfield on Thursday, which I very much doubt will have gone amiss, will have been missed by Carroll and the rest of the coaching staff. But I mean, the guy that the Cowboys had was literally a turnstile. He was generally shocking.
Yeah.
I just hope we don't live to regret putting Odhiambo on injured reserve, even if he did have to go on.
Yeah, I mean, with his hands, it sounds like pointing in 4 or 5 different directions by the time he's finished playing. Yeah, I mean, Adrian Claiborne said he only has one move, and he did it repeatedly against the left tackle, which is always good. We've got Jermaine Ifedi on one side of the defensive line, isn't it?
Oh, Jermaine.
Yeah, defensively, it's getting off the field on third down and don't let Julio Jones go breaking any NFL records. That could be a good mix, couldn't it?
Yeah, that sounds like a plan to make to go by. I'm not sure that's an exact NFL level game plan, but we can certainly try and hope.
Yeah. It's the hope that kills you, though, at times. One to watch for the Seahawks on offense.
One to watch on offense. Let's go with Paul Richardson again to blow someone out of it and score a touchdown.
Yeah, I mean, last week Desmond Trufant really did shine against Dez Bryant and Terrence Williams, the Cowboys receivers. He completely locked down, as we said about Sherman, locked down outside of the field and really give Dak Prescott no window which to throw into. One to watch for me on offense, I think, is if Dwayne Brown plays. And as I said earlier, it's going to be a big deal in this game. One to watch on defense.
I'm going to go Michael Bennett. He hasn't really blown any games wide open yet this season. I think it needs to happen, and I'm going to go with this week as the time it does.
Yeah, he hasn't really crowded the stat sheet, but if you go back a few weeks, he made two big time run stops on the last Texans drive when it forced him to third and fourth, and Sheldon Richardson made a stop on third down. But apart from that, he hasn't really got on field the headlines that he was getting a couple of years ago. But obviously, he is still playing through that awkward foot injury he has as well. For me on defense, I think it's just going to be see just generally how it works out with Lane, Maxwell, Shaq Griffin. It sounds like they're going to keep Griffin on the right hand side and put Lane and Maxwell on the left first. And then you've got Nico Thorpe after that, and I can't even think who else we've got in defensive.
Justin Coleman,
yeah. And then,
but you forget every single time we discuss this.
Yeah. Well, hopefully the Falcons do, and forget, and he comes up with another pick six. Prediction, Adam?
Oh, my goodness. What a tricky one. This is a real heart over head situation. I'm going to go 34-31 Seattle.
Yeah, I think it's going to have to be a 30-plus day from the Seahawks offense. I'm going to go, because I can't go for the same, 34-27 to the Seahawks. But if it really goes pear-shaped, it could be an early bedtime, I think, on another late night, but it could be cutting off to get to bed at a somewhat respectable hour, maybe. Moving on quickly, other NFL news. Philip Rivers has been placed into the concussion protocol and may miss his first ever start. Only Eli Manning and Russell Wilson are the other starting quarterbacks in the league who have never missed a start. It's just quite remarkable how injury hit that team is, and the fact that Rivers hasn't foul to it until this week, Adam.
Yeah, it's a complete hex on that team. They always seem to have back-breaking injuries at all times. But is Cardale Jones injured as well? Because he doesn't seem to be starting. And I thought they traded for him in the summer.
Yeah, they did. But I think, is it Clemens is their backup?
Jesus Christ.
Is it Clemens? I might.
Yeah, it is Kellen Clemens. But do me a favour.
Yeah, it comes off the game where the Chargers nearly got out-charged by the Jags. And Blake Bortles, according to Greg Rosenthal on NFL, is the first quarterback to throw into two interceptions in the final 2 minutes of regulation while trailing and still win the game.
It was that was an insane finish to the game.
Just incredible. I mean, there's missed kicks and all sorts going on, and then you had defensive touchdowns again. It just was quite something. But that Jags team is winning in spite of their quarterback, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And they're not winning in spite in the same way as, Peyton Manning's Broncos won in spite. At least Manning knew what the coverages were, knew what the protections were, and knew where to put the ball or, when to hold it and throw it away. Bortles doesn't know what he's doing, and they're still winning. Yeah. And it's, you know, we'll have to see if that can keep up or not.
Yeah, we're gonna see it up close and personal in what, 3 weeks?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's gonna be fun. Also, earlier today, a couple hours before we started recording, the Buffalo Bills made possibly the strangest decision a team in playoff contention has made in quite some years. They've decided to bench Tyrod Taylor, or as I call him, Ty God, in favour of rookie and former Pittsburgh Panther Nathan Peterman. This is up there with bizarre world of decisions. I mean, you had him as a true or false a few weeks ago. I said, no, they're going to find any reason not to pay him money. And this has just proved that. This is just bizarre, isn't it?
It's an absolute madness. I don't know what they're playing at, aside from probably you can say that this was always going to happen regardless, and they were just waiting for the really bad game to happen for them to do it, and it's happened. But it's a complete madness, and it's very disrespectful to a player who has done them very well. And it massively hinders their team, and it hinders someone like LeSean McCoy, who benefits hugely from the dual threat of Taylor. And you know, you've just traded for Kelvin Benjamin, and now you're getting rid of the ball. It doesn't make any sense to me, I have to say.
No, it's just don't get how they've treated Tyrod. I mean, they tried the hardest to trade him last year, and as we said before we started recording, it's going to be a case where a team, probably another team in the NFC, is going to hit the jackpot with Taylor in the off season when they just likely get rid of him for nothing, and he just rubs it in their face for the next few years. It doesn't make any sense. Last Sunday, they did see one of the more heartwarming but also at the same time heartbreaking stories to come out of the NFL. If anyone watched the San Francisco 49ers get their first win of the season against the hapless New York Giants, Marquise Goodwin caught and ran in an 82-yard touchdown pass on a pretty nice pass from rookie CJ Beathard as well. And Marquise Goodwin, as he got to the end zone, broke down in tears, which at the time seemed somewhat peculiar in the grand scheme of the game, but in the grand scheme of his personal life, it's quite a special moment in a season which has not had many, Adam.
Yeah, it was a terrible, terrible thing. And you know, incredible that he even wanted to play on a day like that. But send our condolences to him and his family for what must be a very tricky situation.
Yeah, 4 a.m. on Sunday morning, some 7-8 hours before the game started, Marquise Goodwin and his wife lost their premature baby in the early hours of Sunday morning. Marquise Goodwin played, and then had, as I said, one of the brighter moments through all the heartbreak that our family must be going through. But they did that against the Giants, and for some reason, Adam, they're keeping Ben McAdoo to the end of the season, it appears.
Well, they might as well keep losing and get the best pick they can get. It's a ridiculous strategy, and it's going to be used by a few teams this year, but
yeah.
I think they could be on for the number one pick at this rate.
Yeah, it would not surprise me. I mean, you suggested that, and I kind of shut it down, but thinking about it would not surprise that, especially in the second day, they just have completely given up on playing for the head coach. I mean, Goodwin, you saw Carlos Hyde just take yards at will. Matt Breida got a ridiculous couple of long runs where they just didn't even bother tackling him. It's just, they just quit on their coach, and the fact that they're going to let the players do that for the next 6-7 weeks is just bizarre. On Monday night, as I said, the Panthers did run all over the Miami Dolphins. They ran for like 400 yards or something ridiculous. If it wasn't for a slight cramping issue, Cam Newton probably would have ran in an 80-yard jogged in an 18-yard rushing touchdown. The Panthers are starting to, like the Falcons, the wheels are starting to turn again, and they could be a tough out with that defense in the playoffs, Adam.
Yeah, I said to you yesterday, you can be good without being good at running, but if you are good at running the ball, it makes everything else a whole lot easier.
Yeah.
And I think the Panthers are the absolute embodiment of that.
Yeah.
Their entire game opens up when they can run the ball, whether it's Newton, McCaffrey, or Jonathan Stewart. I mean, and then similarly to the Saints, they've learned how to run the ball, and now look how well they're playing in all elements. They were 7-9 when they couldn't run, and now they can run. They could it could even be number one seed in the NFC.
Yeah, the NFC is stacked, isn't it, this year? I mean, you've got the Saints, the Vikings who are doing things. I mean, you've got Jared Goff and Case Keenum in an NFL game, and it's arguably the game of the weekend, which is just a year ago with what Jeff Fisher was doing with those two quarterbacks. It's
insane.
Unbelievable, isn't it, really?
Absolutely insane.
Yeah, elsewhere, week 11, quickly, your lock of the week, Adam. Is it going to be another case of whoever the Browns play?
Oh, that is a good question. Why don't you give yours whilst I pull up the weekly schedule?
I'm going to get in there before you do. I think the Jags are going to beat the Browns. The coaching decisions in-game from the Browns against the Lions were bizarre. I mean, the quarterback sneak with 15 seconds to go from the 3-yard line, you don't even get anywhere. It's just...
With no timeouts.
Yeah, with no timeouts, bizarre world. Although the Lions were quite clever with the gamesmanship. They just lay on Deshaun Kizer for 5 seconds, giving them no chance to get up and spike the ball. But in-game...
I was surprised they didn't get a delay of game penalty, that. It was so blatant.
Yeah, you see the refs, there's nothing we can do, which is just, as you say, it's a bit strange. I think, yeah, the Jags... In spite of Blake Bortles, I said that'd be my lock of the week.
My lock of the week will be the Chiefs at the Giants.
Yeah, that's a good one. Shock of the week, Adam?
Shock of the week will be... it's probably not like a shock because you'd probably expect it to happen, but I think the Eagles to go into Dallas and basically win the division... there and then on Sunday Night Football in Dallas. I think whilst that may be like a shocking result, I think it'd be a real statement result. And so I'll go for the Eagles to do the Cowboys in Dallas.
Yeah, I think along the same lines, I think I'm going to go because just where it is, I think the Ravens to beat the Packers in Green Bay. I mean, the fact that they haven't flexed a Week 12 game out for the Packers on primetime is... ridiculous, and I think the Ravens have just enough on defense to cause them issues, and if they get
they're
the game going,
so bad though.
I know, but Brett Hundley's not great. I mean, they beat the Bears, and the Bears have no wide receivers. They've traded for Dontrell Inman, and he's still somehow the third receiver. It's weird. I mean, it's a dead man walking there, isn't it, with John Fox in Chicago?
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. But anything else NFL-wise caught your attention, Adam?
I think that's probably just about me. It's just the NFC is so exciting. The AFC is sort of trudging its way to the playoffs. Whereas the NFC, I mean, there's probably any one of 10 teams that could make it at this stage, which is nuts, really.
Yeah, it's going to be quite something. Every game is going to matter in different ways with tiebreakers and strength of schedules and everything. It's going to be quite a fun sprint to the finish in the next 6 weeks or so in the NFL. Next week we'll be back to talk about Monday Night Football and all that came with it, and then look forward to next Sunday, Thanksgiving weekend in America. So that means next Thursday night has 3 NFL games on TV. So that's going to be fun. I'm not too sure what the 3 games are, but they're on TV. And then as the Seahawks head down the West Coast to play the San Francisco 49ers, Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch. Also, talking about the Niners, that was pretty cool to watch John Lynch and Shanahan in the middle of that. It's quite hard to dislike that pair, isn't it?
Yeah, they do seem like two nice guys. The 3 games next week are the Vikings at the Lions, the Chargers at the Cowboys, and the Giants at the Redskins. So 3... Well, a decent one and 2 stinkers, really.
So Giants at the Redskins on primetime. Ouch. I think by then, I think the turkey and everything will be fully consumed, and the beer tabs will be extensive, I think. You might need to
make every drink a double in order to avoid missing that one.
Yeah, but we'll preview the Niners game next week, and also obviously next week to see the Midlands meet in Birmingham for that game at Actress and Bishop. All the information is on the Seahawks Facebook page, UK Seattle Seahawks fans. On Twitter, it also, I think, exists. It's at Seahawkers UK. We catch the podcast and Podbean at thepedestrianpodcast.podbean.com. Ourselves at Stu_Court, at Adam D. Nathan, at RossBell1984, if he ever returns to the 3-man pod. Maybe we'll get one of those next week. But until then, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast. Wherever you're watching the game this weekend, enjoy it and
go Hawks!
thought you were going to do like a South American commentator thing.
I was considering going into that.
Right.
Would have been great.
That is going to do it. 12, they're bringing the trophy home. Your Seahawks, Super Bowl 48 champions.